This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The 1924 silent film classic Greed, directed by Eric von Stroheim, has topped the American Film Institute's list of the 10 most wanted lost films. The film was lost in the sense that the studio cut it down to 135 minutes from the director's intended 4.5-hour length. My guest Rick Schmidlin has reconstructed the film. It will premiere Sunday night on Turner Classic Movies. Schmidlin's restoration of Orson Welles' film Touch of Evil was released last year. The movie Greed is adapted from Frank Norris's novel McTeague. McTeague is a strong but not very bright or worldly man from California mine country who starts a dental practice without a license. He falls in love with one of his patients who happens to be his best friend's fiance. The friend, Marcus, steps aside but later seeks revenge. Just before McTeague marries, his intended wins a $5,000 lottery, which he insists on saving, not spending, even after he loses his practice and they descend into poverty. McTeague ends up killing his wife and confronting his former best friend and rival in a fight to the death in the scorching heat of Death Valley. I asked Rick Schmidlin about the cinematic breakthroughs in Greed.
Greed basically was a major breakthrough as far as location direction. Von Stroheim shot it almost as a documentary where he shot on existing sets in existing buildings, on existing streets, even to the point where he brought the final climax to Death Valley, which was shot under 140-degree weather conditions. They had asked him to shoot it somewhere up in the Oxnard area in the desert, and von Stroheim wanted to go to the actual location that Frank Norris, in his book McTeague, had written about. So he brought his crew to Death Valley. During that trip, one of the guides died, and Gene Herschel lost 20 pounds.
He's one of the stars of the film.
Exactly. He became very ill, lost 20 pounds, and it was an excruciating experience for everybody. But von Stroheim captured that, something that we almost consider normal now, where you would go to a location. At that point, everything was basically confined around Hollywood or around New York as far as the American cinema.
I have to say the lighting in that Death Valley sequence at the end of the film is pretty extraordinary. I'm wondering if any of that is hand-tinted as well.
The actual black and white photography is the way it appeared in Death Valley. He had William Reynolds and Ben Daniels. He had two cameras going, which he had throughout the entire shoot. It was lit the way it was naturally set there, with obviously reflectors and things of that nature that were used during that period of time and are still used today. But we did tint the Death Valley sequence yellow, as was specifically required in the script. So now it has a more intense, hot feel to it. So now it's not stark black and white like we've previously seen, but it has a yellow glow to it.
The first version of Eric von Stroheim's Greed was about 9 hours, and the version he actually showed the studio later was over 4 hours. What was his ambition? Why make it so long? I mean, studios just were not releasing 4-hour films.
Well, you have to think that Intolerance had been 3 hours, D.W. Griffith's film in 1916, and von Stroheim's intention was to do the master one better. Also, at that time, you would show a cartoon, a comic short, maybe a B-feature, and a feature film. So you would go out for an evening's entertainment. Von Stroheim felt that audiences were ready for one good, solid evening of solid programming rather than a bunch of little fillers and things like that, that there was a audience that wanted just intelligent viewing and would want not... And people think he wrote and took things right from the book. He expanded upon the book rather than deleting upon the book, which is what would be the common practice in filmmaking. And he just felt that this would intrigue audiences. His idea was that you would go in and see the first half of the film, go out and maybe have a dinner for an hour, and come back and see the second half of the film.
What did the studio do when it got this 4-hour film?
The studio basically rejected von Stroheim's 4-hour version. So what happened is Von Stroheim sent it to his friend Rex Ingram in New York, whose editor Grant Whitehawk reduced it to 3.5 hours. Rex Ingram was the famed director of Four Horsemen and the Apocalypse. He was basically known for his Rudolph Valentino films. They screened the film in New York, and one of the business people for the MGM at the time watched it and said, gee, the first half plays beautifully, but if people come and see the second half first, they will never come back to see the first half. And on that alone, the film was reduced to a little over 2 hours.
So what's left of the remaining hours of film that were edited out of the final cut?
The film was melted down for its silver content. As soon as they...
its silver content?
There's silver in the emulsion of the nitrate film. And I think it was worth at that time 5 cents an ounce. And that was what you would do with your extra footage after you were done with it, that the studios would melt it down and sell it for the content of silver that was in the nitrate. So Greed was destroyed, supposedly, immediately after the edit was done. And that's why there was no footage that existed and why it was considered the great lost film.
What did you find that enabled you to restore the film?
It was during the time that I had just come back from Northern California, where I had worked with Walter Murch on Touch of Evil. And Universal Studios asked me if I could find some publicity photographs that they could use for the Touch of Evil campaign. I went to the Margaret Herrick Library. And while I was waiting for the photographs, I decided to do just a little research on my own. Basically, I had just finished reading a 280-page version of the screenplay of Greed, which a friend of mine, Ray Manzarek, who was the keyboardist of the Doors, had given me for Christmas earlier that year. And I just wrote down on a little card, give me what you have on Greed. And they brought out two boxes, two very large boxes. One contained a continuity screenplay dated March 31st, 1923, that was 50 pages longer than the screenplay I had read. And the other box contained 633 stills, more than 230 stills than were previously known to exist. And I wound up spending the next 3 days there, going through the script, going through the stills, and realizing that this entire story could be told.
So what you did was take the original script with this 50 extra pages and tell parts of the deleted story through the film stills, the photographic stills that you found.
Exactly. The stills were able to tell a linear story. Every single scene that was exercised from the film was captured in stills. Plus, there were 633 titles that were originally intended for the film, and I was able to use 600 of those titles, taking out the titles that previously had been put in by MGM and putting in the titles that von Stroheim originally intended, which kept the narrative very strong.
My guest is Rick Schmidlin, and he's just restored the 1924 silent film classic Greed by Eric von Stroheim, and it will be premiering Sunday night on Turner Classic Movies. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Rick Schmidlin, and he just produced a restoration of Eric von Stroheim's classic 1924 silent film, Greed. What was the impact of Greed on von Stroheim's career?
Devastating. I don't think he ever fully recovered. He did go on to make films such as The Merry Widow, The Wedding March. Queen Kelly was never fully realized. That was the one that he had done with Gloria Swanson that was being produced by Joe Kennedy. And he just fully never recovered from Greed. I mean, if you can imagine creating a true masterpiece and having it totally destroyed by others, he was never the same after that.
Never the same because the film was taken away from him and the studios lost faith in him?
That his one really golden moment, his one moment of truth, was lost. It was like writing the one fantastic novel, painting that one perfect picture, and just having it not only reviewed horribly, but destroyed.
Did people go see it?
Greed was not a success at the time. Half the people who reviewed it said it was the greatest piece of cinema yet. The other half thought it was the ugliest, most disgusting, putrid film ever made. It was forgotten about. It was years later in the 30s when people like Weinberg and people like Sergei Eisenstein from Russia and Jean Renoir from France started discussing Greed and saying that it was the great lost masterpiece of the silent cinema. They were all followers of von Stroheim, and they kept the legend alive for the years to follow.
Von Stroheim is a fascinating movie figure. He emigrated to the United States from Austria, started his film career working with D.W. Griffith. What did he do for Griffith?
As he once said, he started sweeping the floors and was then promoted as an assistant to Mr. Griffith. He worked on Birth of a Nation. He worked as an assistant on Intolerance, Griffith's great masterpiece, other great masterpiece. And then he went to work for John Emerson, where he went to New York and worked on films with Fairbanks and worked himself up into the ranks as an actor and as a technical advisor of military expertise, to the point where he finally convinced Carl Laemmle to let him direct a film.
Now, when he first read the novel McTeague, the novel by Frank Norris that Greed is based on, he was living in a house in a room on Skid Row in New York. What was he doing there? What point of his life was he in?
Von Stroheim says that he was that night in a room on Skid Row, and his job was to make sure the prostitutes got safely into their rooms. And as he had this horrible job, he found in the room a copy of McTeague by Frank Norris. And that night, he did a horrible job watching the prostitutes and did a wonderful job reading the book.
What was he doing on Skid Row? Was this before he started his movie career?
Von Stroheim came to America around 1909. And at that point is when he added the Von. He was just Eric Stroheim at that time. And he worked around in various jobs as a Austrian immigrant.
So the Von is something that he just added to his name?
He added nobility to his name.
Did he lie about coming from nobility?
Yes. He came from a father who was a Jewish hat maker in the not-so-fine part of Vienna. His mother came from Prague. And though his background is kind of sketchy, I was able to find recently six family portraits of his family that came from that period of time that still have not been published and not been seen by anybody. And it kind of shows that, yes, his father has holes in his portraits. His father has holes in his shoes. And, you know, he was not the count that von Stroheim had told Thomas Curtis about. He was, and Peter Noble, he was definitely came from a more humbler background.
He was nicknamed by some the man you love to hate. And I think that was because he played German officers in World War I films. I guess the most famous portrayal like that is in Grand Illusion, the 1937 French film. Was he in many roles like that where he played a German officer?
Well, Grand Illusion was done much earlier. He played roles all through the teens, 1917 during the war. He was in D.W. Griffith's Hearts of the World. In one Universal film, he throws a baby out the window and then rapes the mother. He played the worst of the Nazis. Von Stroheim was an Austrian Jew that hated the German regime. And his way of combating what was going on in Europe, both during the First World War and the Second World War, was by portraying these German soldiers this way. I just found recently a award that his son didn't even know he had, that he was awarded a special award from the French Resistance in 1944 for his work in helping them in France during the war and being supportive of them.
I think one of the roles he's most famous for in America is his role in Sunset Boulevard, in which he plays the butler to the washed-up silent film star played by Gloria Swanson.
Yes, two short stories on that. First, I was fortunate enough about a week and a half ago to be able to visit Billy Wilder, and I was able to show him selected scenes, and he's now since watched the entire production of Greed. And he told me that von Stroheim, was one of his great heroes, and he was just so glad that he was able to put him in Sunset Boulevard, and that the idea of the fan mail coming from the butler was von Stroheim's idea. But I had dinner the other night with the von Stroheim family, his son and the widow of Eric von Stroheim Jr., his grandson Eric von Stroheim III, and Mary Alice von Stroheim, the widow of Eric von Stroheim Jr., said he made one comment about Sunset Boulevard that I thought was hilarious. He said, "It's bad enough that they're making me play a butler in the film. That's degrading enough, but I have to play a sloppy butler." He goes, "That's the worst."
Well, he was a pretty meticulous filmmaker, wasn't he? Really attention to detail.
Oh, he was. He cared about detail, detail that you would not think that you'd see, but actually we did sense.
Give me a good example of that from Greed.
The detail in Greed, the dental office is a dental office, and it is in a room that he actually made McTeague live in, so that he had a sense of that. The food that they were eating at the time was the food that the Swiss German family would have eaten at the time. The conditions in Zarkhaus, which he did build, that set, are, you know, the conditions that Zarkhaus would have been in. But the greatest thing is, again, Death Valley, bringing a crew to 140-degree temperature and staying out there for those weeks. Everything had to be real because he felt that the audience would feel if it was imitated, if it was on the screen.
What do you know about how von Stroheim and his film crew and the actors survived Death Valley? How did they do it? Did they trek in and out every day? Were they just on the edge of it?
They camped. No. They camped. They stayed there, and they hated him for it. They, Gene, finally at the end of the scene, there's a fight between Gene Herschel and Gibson Golland, McTeague and Marcus. And von Stroheim said, "If you want to get out of this scene, I want you to really fight each other and really make it brutal." And if you watch that fight, you see a sense of realism in 140-degree temperature that you have not seen in any other film.
And you think that's because they were so desperate to get out?
They were desperate. Yeah, after 3 weeks and you're in Death Valley, and someone says the only way you, and it's 140 degrees, and if you beat up the next guy, whoever makes it the most realistic and makes the scene work, you're going to be out of there. You're going to do everything you can to make that scene the best scene and the most realistic fight you've ever seen. And they were both so filled with hatred of what von Stroheim was doing, they just went at each other.
Now, I know that you found some of the original title cards that were taken out by the studio in the studio cut of Greed, the shortened cut of Greed. I want to read you one of the title cards and tell me if this is one of the ones that was taken out by the studio. And this is after the Trina character, the character played by Zazu Pitts, when her marriage is falling apart. And her husband's, you know, been hitting her. And the card says, "This brutality in some strange, inexplicable way aroused in Trina a morbid, unwholesome love of submission."
Yep. That was what he intended to put into the film.
Was that something that was taken out by the studio?
That was taken out by the studio, yes.
Too unwholesome? Too unwholesome a thought?
It was not a wholesome thought. It was a thought that he wanted this character to have, and he was very serious about developing this character in a very meticulous way.
Are there any changes that you've made in Greed that you think people who have seen the cut version that's circulated for so many years will be very surprised by because it's not what they remember from the original?
Yes, one of the most famous lines from the film, "Let's go sit by the sewer," had to be removed.
Why?
It was not what von Stroheim intended. The scene is when Gibson Golland and Zazu Pitts are to go for a walk, and they're going to go for a walk that is going there, and they're during the walk, they're going to go and sit on the sewer and pass a dead rat. And basically, what was supposed to be intended to be said was, "Let's go and have a nice walk," and then you would see this imagery. But somebody at the studio decided it would be nice to say, "Let's go and sit by the sewer and get a bad laugh out of it," and they put that in. And it's probably the most controversial edit I made in the film, because there are those purists that really did love that line. They miss, "Let's go sit by the sewer." And I would say that would be the biggest comment I've heard from anybody. Why did I take that line out of the film? And it was because it did not, it was not in the intended story of von Stroheim.
Okay. Well, Rick Schmidlin, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay.
Rick Schmidlin's reconstruction of Erich von Stroheim's Greed will premiere Sunday night on Turner Classic Movies. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.